You're listening to The Stressless Life with Dr. Yip, a podcast about conquering your fears and overcoming anxiety. Our question for the day is, perfectionism, procrastination, and productivity, what do they have in common? I am your host, Noah Laracy. Let's say hello to Dr. Yip.
Hi, Noah.
Dr. Yip is a licensed psychologist who's board certified in behavioral and cognitive therapy and an expert in the treatment of anxiety and OCD. Perfectionism, procrastination, and productivity.
Yes.
Why are they all doing in this one podcast?
Well, because they actually have a lot in common. In fact, their common denominator is anxiety.
Anxiety. Okay, so let's talk about perfectionism first. We discussed that a little bit before, but let's review. How does anxiety relate to perfectionism?
Well, when we are striving to achieve perfection, what usually drives that sense of needing to be perfect is our fear of being imperfect, is our fear of being not good enough, is our fear of being not important enough, or even fear of rejection. So we talked a little bit of that when we were discussing social performance anxiety.
Right, and that was episode, I believe, 6.
Okay, well, I'm glad you remember.
Great. Perfectionism gets in our way because we try to do things perfectly, which is an impossible standard.
Yes, it's not possible. And to be honest with you, what one person considers perfect may not be the same as what another person would perceive.
So next, procrastination.
Yes.
Procrastination is something we all are guilty of, I'm sure, putting things off for another day, right?
Yes.
How does that relate to perfectionism?
Well, again, the common denominator here is anxiety. So when we are procrastinating, there are usually two situations that could lead to procrastination. One is if we are completely bored out of our minds and we're completely underwhelmed and we don't really care about this topic or situation at hand, and then we will procrastinate because it doesn't matter, right? Now, that doesn't involve anxiety as much as the other end of the spectrum, which is when we are completely overwhelmed and high strung, we end up procrastinating. And anxiety is very much a part of that. We're usually overwhelmed when we experience a task, a job that we feel is too much to handle. And a lot of times, perfectionism can come into play at this. Because if we are trying to attempt to achieve perfection, that is going to require a lot more effort, time, and energy than if we are trying to just complete mediocre work or, you know, even above average work. So that would cause us to feel really anxious and stressed out because we are trying to achieve something that is not realistic or achievable.
So procrastination is not the result of laziness, then, is it?
Oh, that's a huge myth. Many people believe that people who procrastinate are lazy, and that's actually not true. People who procrastinate have a fear of not being able to get the job done well. And therefore, because of their fear, it hinders their motivation to get it done. Because if I don't think I'm going to get something done well, why would I be motivated to do it anyways, right? And if I'm not motivated, then I'm certainly not going to be driven to achieve this task. So there's actually a cycle involved in this. And do you remember when we talked about how thoughts trigger emotions, trigger behaviors?
Of course. Yeah, that's known as the CBT triangle, right?
Yes, that's definitely the CBT triangle. So what happens with procrastination is a person might have a thought such as, this is too hard, or I'll fail, or I'll never get this done, or it won't turn out perfect. And if you're going to have any of those thoughts, which are cognitive distortions, then it's going to cause you to feel what?
Anxious.
Anxious, not just anxious, and you feel bad about yourself, right? You feel a lack of confidence and a lack of sense of being able to achieve this thing. So if you don't feel that you can do it, then you're definitely not going to be motivated to do it. If you're afraid that you're going to fail, then it's much easier to not approach the situation than to tackle it. So if you're feeling this way, then what would be the subsequent reaction, the behavior?
Do nothing.
Exactly. Avoidance. Avoidance of the task, which could lead us to feel even worse about ourselves. So we call that procrastination.
So let's be clear here. You talked about two different types of procrastination. The first type was when you're trying to avoid a task that you really just don't want to do because it's undesirable.
It's undesirable and you really don't care for it.
So that would be working on your taxes or taking out the garbage.
Yeah.
That's one type of procrastination. That's not what we're talking about here, though. The second type is going to be something that you want to or have to get done but are just putting off for other reasons.
Exactly. I do want to clarify, though, even something as mundane as taking out the trash, if it's something that you know you have to do, and even though you don't care much for it, you don't do it, it will still lead to negative emotions, such as guilt or a lack of feeling like you're useful. And that will still lead to further procrastination. So let's say we're talking about taking out the trash. And let's say someone is telling you to take out the trash, though you really, really don't care for it and can care less whether the trash is there or not, and really don't care about the person who's telling you to take out the trash. Then that wouldn't lead to any negative emotions.
So what would be an example of something that would lead to negative emotions?
For example, let's say that taking out the trash is part of your job, or let's say it's part of your chore. And let's say your spouse or a parent is telling you to take out the trash. Well, you know you're responsible for it. You know it's part of your duty. So you know it's something that you have to do, whether you like to do it or not. And if you don't do it, and if you keep putting it off, keep putting off, keep putting it off, then what you'll end up doing is feeling guilty about it, or you might feel like, oh, well, now maybe I'm just a procrastinator. You've labeled yourself as a procrastinator. And if you're going to label yourself as such, then you might conclude, well, I might as well just keep procrastinating. And all of these thoughts, these distorted thoughts, are mind traps that keeps you in procrastination mode.
So how about maybe a student who has a paper that's due, or maybe they need to study for the test, and they leave it to the last possible second, right? Maybe like the night before, and they end up pulling an all-nighter. How does procrastination and anxiety relate to that situation?
Well, you know, the funny thing is that I have a lot of students who say, well, Dr. Yip, I procrastinate at the last minute, and it works very well. So why does that happen? Well, you have to remember, back to when we're talking about the fight or flight experience. The fight or flight experience is triggered when we feel there's an imminent danger, right? And when there's imminent danger, we feel more compelled to do something about it, to get to safety, to survive. And even though that paper or that exam may not be a traditional saber tooth, it is kind of like our saber tooth of modern days, right? So as that due date, that deadline looms closer and closer, guess what? That saber tooth is also getting closer and closer. And if it's getting closer and closer, then your fight or flight response will actually become magnified because the imminent danger is right in front of you. So if your fight or flight response is triggered, that gives you the energy that you need to do something about it. And in this instance, doing something about it, surviving this saber tooth, means writing that paper or studying for that exam, which is why procrastinating till the last minute and cramming works in the sense. However, you do have to keep in mind that when our fight or flight energy is at an all-time high, our ability for logical thinking, for reasoning, actually decreases. So our body responds more to intuitive senses. it depends on our intuitive senses. So even though you are cramming at the last minute to prepare for this exam or write this paper, you're not using your highest level of cognitive functioning to get this done.
So there is a price to pay for procrastinating.
There's always a price to pay.
So even if you get it done, it's definitely not going to be your best work.
Exactly.
Aside from a paper, a big one for a lot of people would be returning phone calls or returning emails that just end up, they keep putting them off and putting off. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, maybe the email or phone call just isn't important enough.
But what if it was one that you have to do that you just don't want to do and you keep putting it off and putting it off?
Such as what? Give me an example.
Sometimes maybe you'll get a call from someone you'd rather not talk to, or you have to give some bad news to, or you have to explain something to. So you kind of say, oh, I'm going to do that next week, or you put it at the bottom of your list.
Yeah. Do you feel bad about it?
Well, there's always this sense of dread that you're going to have to do it at some point. So there's always maybe a little bit of underlying tension going on.
So again, it's anxiety, right? That's the culprit. So what you have to do is identify what is the cognitive distortion at play here. What is that mind trap that's keeping you stuck? What's the outcome that you think will happen from making this call?
The idea that it's going to somehow be terrible, not going to go well, probably catastrophizing.
Okay. Well, you might be right. It might be terrible and it might not go well. So you have two options. You can either do it or you don't. Those are your two options. So why would you choose to do it if this is so terrible?
Well, I guess the idea is eventually you'd have to do it, right? I guess
why? Why do you have to? Why can't you just ignore it?
Well, the person would probably keep calling back, or maybe they keep writing, right? Mm-hmm. So there's some societal pressure, and there's almost an unwritten law that you're going to actually have to respond to people.
Okay. Well, then if you're going to have to do it anyways, I guess you just wait for a time when you feel like you want to do it. The question is there an imminent danger to this? Is there a pressing need to get this done right now? If there's not, and there's not a deadline, then yeah, you can just procrastinate forever. And I don't necessarily see anything wrong with that unless it's driving your cognitive errors to cause you to feel bad about yourself. So, for example, I myself have tons of emails that I don't have the time to get to. However, I don't have the cognitive distortions that a person might have, right? I reason with myself that realistically, there's only so many hours in a day, and I weigh out the importance of each of the emails. And if I can't get to it, then it must not take that much of priority. And then I might try to get to it the next day and the next day. If I don't get to it by the week's end, then more likely than not, I'm not going to get to it. And I'll just accept that fact. I can live with the fact that I just won't be able to respond to every single email or every single phone call as possible. And people know not to expect a response from me right away. I think that's also what's wrong with today, and this is probably jumping off topic, is that because in our digital age, everyone believes that you should be reached right away. Oh no, well, whoever made that rule up? So people know that if they're going to contact me, they might not get a response from me for a few days, a week, or maybe not at all. I don't feel bad about it. So therefore, it's not that I'm procrastinating. I'm making an informed choice, an informed decision of how I'm going to respond to this situation, which is different than procrastinating.
Let's raise the stakes a little bit from an email or a phone call. What if someone is procrastinating, putting off going to the doctor or the dentist to get some sort of a checkup? That can have some real life consequences, can't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And again, what is important to do is determining what are the cognitive errors that are causing you to delay and delay and delay, right? Once you're able to identify what are the cognitive errors, then you can adjust for them and determine if there's any evidence. If there's no evidence, then what's a different way of thinking about this situation? And having this different way of thinking might just motivate you a little bit to get this done. Now, as soon as you feel that little bit of motivation, then there are specific strategies that you have to in place. So one of the first things that I teach my patients and students who procrastinate is that one of the reasons why we procrastinate is when we are unclear on our objective, on how to reach our goal, on what path we're supposed to travel, right? So again, when I talked about that phone call, what I basically did was clarified my intention, clarified my goal, and made a determination based on being clear on what's happening here. So I call this breaking mountains down into molehills, right? And it's essentially that. In order to break that mountain down, you have to understand what your objective is. Now, a mountain to travel on for anyone is going to be pretty daunting, wouldn't you say? If I said, no, I want you to go and hike the Patagonia, would you even know where to start, where to end, how long will it take you, what path you would take, what you would need to get there?
Totally overwhelming,
because let's say you've never even heard of the Patagonia. What in the world is that, right? So first, you have to break that down. You have to do your research. Well, what is the Patagonia? How long is that distance? Divide that into the number of days that will take you to get through that distance. And now you've got your little molehills. Now break those molehills down even further. Well, what are you going to need during your trip? And where are you going to sleep? And where are you going to eat? So all of that information makes this mountain more doable. So if you pave the path, you identify all of the various markers on this path, then it gives you insight and it gives you awareness into the path that you have to travel to get to the finish line.
Is it true then that getting to that first step has a huge value, just making the first action, doing the first thing along the path?
Well, the very first thing that you have to do is breaking that mountain down into molehills. So for example, I'm going to give you another analogy. Let's say you have to run a marathon. A marathon is 26.2 miles, right?
Yes.
Something like that. If I say, Noah, tomorrow I want you to go run 26.2 miles, would you be able to do that?
Probably not.
Unless you've been training, I would agree, probably not. Now, what if I said, well, Noah, tomorrow I just want you to run 100 yards. Can you do that?
Definitely.
Okay, and then the next day, since you've ran 100 yards, I'll say, no, well, today try 200 yards. Would you be able to do that?
Yes.
Yes, so every day is an increment. By however many of day, you'd be able to run 26.2 miles. Only because you've started to break that mountain down into molehills. So that in itself is the first step. Once you break that mountain down into molehills, then you basically see the path that you have to travel. So it becomes more achievable, right? Each of those goals, each of those tiny hills are more achievable and realistic. So in your mind, you know you can do it. However, then the next question is, well, when are you going to achieve each of these molehills, right? So too often what people do is they make to-do lists. Well, today I will do this, 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 and that. I will achieve this hill, that hill, these hills, right? The problem with that is how often do your to-do lists just get piled up?
I'm not a big to-do list person, but I do know people that use them and they get piled up all the time. They're all over the house and they're in various states of half done, half not done.
Yes, it's overwhelming to have to-do lists, right? Those to-do lists itself becomes another mountain. So rather than having to-do lists, which are ineffective, it is so important to make sure that you schedule each of your molehills. So what you want to do is plan in a day. When are you going to achieve this molehill? You know, each day there is 1,440 minutes, which means there is a lot of time to procrastinate if you don't account for each of those minutes. So scheduling those molehills. And scheduling is effective because if you schedule it, then you're accountable for it. For example, let's say you have a doctor's appointment tomorrow at 9 a.m. Are you more likely going to go to that appointment if it's in your schedule?
Yes.
Why?
Part of it is that you've made the appointment, right? Mm-hmm. And also there's a fact that you've committed to something and you maybe don't have other things to do during that time, right? Mm-hmm. So I assume you only have one thing scheduled during that time.
Exactly.
Right? So you have no reason not to go.
Exactly. So if it's in your schedule, then you've made a commitment to it and there's no other activities that is taking up that time. So scheduling is very important. However, then again, how often do you have things scheduled and you ignore it?
Once in a while.
Once in a while. Okay, well, what we can do to reduce that once in a while to maybe not even that is the next step, which is visualizations. Now, visualization basically means that you are going to spend a good 10, 15 minutes visualizing the details of this task. Really utilizing all five of your senses to experience this task. And what is the most important part of visualization is experiencing the completion of this task. And the reality is that many people, especially athletes, utilize visualizations in their performance because your brain cannot tell the difference whether an experience is real or imagined. For example, have you ever woken up from a nightmare and felt like it was really happening?
Of course.
Well, did it really happen?
No.
No. And that is how strong your mental images can be. If they are detailed, if they are specific, if you are using all five of your senses and you're experiencing every part of this task, then your mind cannot tell the difference. And especially if you experience the completion of this task, then that gives you the sense it's doable. I can do it. And if you've done it once in your mind, the second time around is going to be that much easier.
Okay, in addition to visualizations, is there anything else that you recommend to our listeners?
Well, that is basically it. You know, you want to recognize the cognitive distortions that are flying in the background that is taking away, that's robbing you of your motivation and drive. And once you do that, you want to be able to break each mountain down into molehills so that the path that you're traveling is achievable and realistic. And if the tasks are achievable and realistic, then the next step is to schedule each of those molehills. And once you schedule it, then take a good 10 to 15 minutes every day and visualize the completion, the details, the specificity of each of those tasks so that you feel that you can do it, which will inherently motivate you to do it, which will actually increase your body's fight or flight adrenaline to get it done.
So if our listeners want to learn more about this topic, you wrote a book about this, didn't you?
Yes, I did. The name of the book is called Productive, Successful You, End Procrastination by Making Anxiety Work for You Rather Than Against You.
Great. And we'll put a link to this on the website and all the information if people are interested in purchasing it.
Yes. Well, it's available on Amazon and it's available as well on my website, dryip.com.
Great. Thank you for listening to the Stressless Life podcast. You can join the discussion and find more information at www.dryip.com/thestresslesslife. Please write to us with questions and comments at thestresslesslife@dryip.com. Until next time, stay stressless.